Alonzo Herndon's story, even before he created his insurance companies, it's fascinating to me. I mean, this guy was born a slave. He was born into slavery. Had a white father, and his mother was his father's slave.
That is correct. Herndon was born in the latter days of slavery. Again, his mother was an enslaved woman. His father was his master. And then after the war, he picked up the barbering trade, first in Jonesboro and then came to Atlanta. And barbering was one of these few places where a black man could establish an independent economic niche. And so it was a place where a number of African Americans went. It was a trade that was strictly segregated by clientele, either all black or white clientele. Herndon eventually came to Atlanta and established the most deluxe tonsorial palace in the entire Southeast, 66 Peachtree Street, a block long, had chandeliers and stamped metal ceilings. Many of the clientele were Atlanta's leading white businessmen who would go down to the barbershop for their morning shave before going to the Fourth National Bank or the Fulton Bag and Cotton Mill, and they'd talk shop and business with these African-American barbers with long strop razors at their necks, listening and being very discreet.
So to be clear, Herndon's Barber Palace, if I could call it that, all black staff, but only served white clientele?
That's right. Because of the physical intimacy of barbering, the clientele was strictly segregated, either all white or all black. And in fact, there was even some resentment that black barbers could cut the hair of white women and children, you know. And actually, in the 1920s, the city passed an ordinance outlawing black barbers from cutting the hair of white women and children.
So I got to think he's making a lot of money in this establishment.
He's making a lot of money. He has a couple of other barber establishments as well. He's reputed to be Atlanta's first black millionaire by about 1910. And, you know, people talk about the greatest generation, the World War II generation, but I often refer to that generation, Herndon's generation, who came from slavery and within a couple of generations had built up businesses coming from really literally nothing as arguably the greatest generation.
So how does he transition from the barber business to the insurance business?
Around 1905, he bought what was called the Atlanta Benevolent and Protective Association for a grand total of $140 from a local preacher. African Americans, when they would buy insurance policies, would often be shortchanged or discriminated against, or the companies would find loopholes to not deliver on the payments and so forth. So Herndon bought this company and then acquired a number of other companies, and Atlanta Life really began to be one of the giants in African American insurance. And it served both community purposes as well as his own, you know, entrepreneurial ambitions as well. I mean, it was serving the community in this kind of way, providing people with honest deals, you know, coming through on your promises and so forth. And at the same time, obviously, he became very wealthy.
And was this a segregated business, meaning that the policyholders were only black?
You know, as far as I know, they were. I don't know that for sure. But again, it's filling a niche. It's providing a need. So the clientele is overwhelmingly black at the very least, and it's different qualitatively than, say, a white life insurance company, a white one, because it has this kind of community kind of identity. And Atlanta Life always was very much involved in the African-American community. Atlanta Life set up their offices on Auburn Avenue and then quickly became part of this network of African-American institutions that emerged during the era of Jim Crow, which included businesses and churches and schools and the YMCA and so forth, and was a real kind of crucible for black leadership.
The success of his insurance company really transcended the metro Atlanta area. It had a national clientele.
That's right. They expanded to other cities. I think they were one of the eight largest African-American life insurance companies in the United States. North Carolina Mutual is another one in Durham, North Carolina. Yeah, so it's a prominent establishment. They had their original building on Auburn Avenue supplanted in more recent years by a very fancy building also on Auburn Avenue, which kind of reflected their stature.
And Herndon, like his wealthy white counterparts in the early 20th century, was a subscriber to the gospel of wealth. He returned a lot of money to the community, didn't he?
He absolutely did. It's interesting. I mean, he was very prominent in the National Negro Business League, but he was also a member of the Georgia Equal Rights Association. You know, he was friends with both Booker T. Washington and W.E.B. Du Bois. You know, so he's kind of straddling these worlds, and they're not inconsistent for him. His son, Norris, established the Herndon Foundation in 1950, and Norris had succeeded his father as head of the company when Alonzo Herndon died in 1927, and again, made a commitment to, among other things, the emerging civil rights movement. So Atlanta Life in the 50s would hire teachers who had been fired because they had joined the NAACP. And later on in the 1960s, Jesse Hill, who then became the president, would help bail out the students when they were arrested after sitting in at segregated restaurants, for instance.
Atlanta Life still in business today, isn't it?
They are still in business today. And also still around is the Herndon Home, which was this very elaborate residence for Alonzo Herndon and his wife Adrian and their son, built in 1908 on the hill overlooking the Georgia Dome, to the west of the Georgia Dome near Morris Brown College.
The original headquarters of the life insurance company in the Sweet Auburn district. What's the status of that now?
It's an endangered building, frankly. It's an imperiled building. One of a number of buildings of Black Atlanta that were once very significant and are really in disrepair and disarray right now. So it's on the list of endangered buildings, really.
Cliff Kuhn, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Steve.